Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning. Rich Honan is our guest, and Rich joins us once a month or so to stop in and talk about corporate attorney stuff because he is one. He's our corporate attorney. Rich Honan pays a visit with some thoughts on headlines from the business world. He is with Phillips Lytle LLP, partner in charge of the Albany office. And Rich, it's always very nice to have you here. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Great to see you.
Good to have you. So let's talk about this. That is the federal budget. You know, around Thanksgiving time, we were talking, with the immigration, and this is going to be a battle between Republicans and Democrats, and they're going to say, how can we get to the president, and we want to avoid a shutdown and so forth. Well, in case anyone has noticed, the budget's due Thursday.
Right.
Okay. So that's December 11th, and it's due Thursday, and Congress still has not reached a deal to avoid a government shutdown. And interestingly, that's hard to find information on.
Yeah, nobody cares. You know, what if you had a government shutdown and nobody showed up? And you're right. And when we were thinking about, you know, this segment last time, we said, this will be great. We'll talk about federal budget.
It'll be right before the budget,
process,
everybody
right.
will be.
I could bring out all my corporate law chops and everything. And now it's, what would you say? It's probably the sixth or seventh or eighth trending thing.
I don't know. I can't even find. Right. I cannot find anything major on the.
Right.
I mean, we're dominated, obviously, with CIA reports,
right.
and
which
so
is important,
so. Yeah, absolutely,
and is not the CIA. Well, I know you guys talked about it this morning, but that's a pretty nuanced issue, actually. You know, the CIA, the Enhanced Interrogation Technique report. But we have that. We have, obviously, the Gruber testimony on Capitol Hill today, so he can get beat up by a bunch of Republicans. Obviously, you have the racism dialogue that, is kind of trying to get started. And you have the president's executive order on immigration. And all of those are kind of outshining the budget. But, you know, the numbers are not uncompelling. It's $1.14 trillion budget. And there's no indication that anybody's really started to work seriously on it. I was actually talking to I was corresponding with one of the partners in our Washington, D.C. office. And in one of the emails he sent me, I think it might have been Monday, he said, well, there's no legislation tonight because everybody's going to the White House Christmas party.
Well, it's priorities, Rich.
Yeah, exactly.
It is priorities.
Right.
Because
that is open bar.
That's right. You went exactly where I was at.
Exactly.
Now, from my understanding, from what I have been able to find, the idea was, okay, we've come to some agreement here to agree to disagree, but we can get around this. We can keep most of the federal government open. And then things started to fall apart yesterday.
A little bit. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Because they could actually keep the whole generally, the deal was we'll keep the whole government open. And the idea was we'll pass another. It's a combination between a continuing resolution and an omnibus bill, which they now call the Cromnibus, if you're on Capitol.
Yes, Cromnibus.
That's very,
yeah.
If you're in the know. And the idea would be you keep most of the government, you pass a budget for almost everybody through October.
Those who brought you the fiscal cliff, it's the Cromnibus.
Right. It does sound like something you see on late night TV, right? It almost sounds like something senior citizens would ride on to get on. But and then with the Homeland Security part of the budget, and that's the part that contains the operational part of the president's executive order, that would be approved through February. And so everything would move forward. And that was kind of the framework. I think that's still the framework they're looking at. One of the big issues, obviously, is the more Tea Party types are kind of unwilling to fund any part of the president's immigration initiative, his executive order, especially because he's really taunting them with it by not only putting it in their face the way he did, but also now there's a huge ramp up towards actually implementing the law. They're, they're renting office space and they're getting it all ramped up. And he's really just, you know, waving the red flag in front of the bull. And some of them seem to be falling for the bait and want to just not fund that at all. If that happens, you could be looking at a shutdown. And the Republicans are wise enough to know that no matter whose fault it is, they always get blamed for that.
Right.
The interesting other part of the budget is the amount of issues, the breadth of the issues that they're actually talking about, because they're actually talking about real, you know, money issues. And so one of the holdups now is terrorism insurance for cities, reinsurance for terrorism. So this is how cities and municipalities get reinsured for terrorist attacks.
Apparently one of the breakdowns last night was a disagreement over the terrorism.
And they attach riders to, there's EPA regulations that are trying to be modified. There's the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and that's the corporation that's basically, I'll say it this way, to me, it's the union bailout that's been going on for 20 years for unfunded union and other type of pension plans. But the breadth of issues is interesting, you know, and you also have to wonder how long is a $1.14 trillion budget, how long is that document? You know, nobody's reading it. Right.
Well, they always show when they publish it, and it's that, you know, it's like three Sears catalogs,
right,
the old Sears catalogs together. And, right, and no, why, you know, I think you go and you, like the phone book, you go, you make sure your name's there, and then you move on. Right.
Exactly. So that's what's going on. So we will know in the next, and the last part of that, the strategy is, it looks like the House will probably pass something in the next day or two, and then the Senate will have literally hours to debate this and then decide whether or not they're going to vote on it. And I think there'll be heavy pressure to continue the government in one form of another.
So the best guess, according to some of the Washington blogs, is that, okay, maybe they'll pass a short-term extension, give the House and Senate a few days to pass the final bill, and then we'll avoid everything.
Yeah.
But to your point that they release a bill today, give Congress less than 48 hours to beat the deadline, and then even if the House passes it, then, as you say, the Senate then has to figure out, they have to get an agreement from Republicans to skip procedural rules and pass the bill.
Yeah, they'll do it. Which they'll get that. They'll get that agreement. But, you know, you don't know. I'm sure that the White House is just praying that Ted Cruz will stand up and filibuster. But I think, and you never know, I think the White House is not going to get their wish. I think there is actually not going to be a shutdown. I think you might see a one or two day delay or extension for a number of reasons, one of which that, you know, the 114th Congress, you know, which starts next year, I think is going to want to start somewhat fresh and be able to pursue their own agenda. But
Rich, for those of us who have lived in New York State for a long time, we don't worry about late budgets.
It's really even a misnomer to call it a budget, because it's not really correct. We don't worry about late budgets, but you know, we set the bar so low that, you know, Andrew Cuomo, when he came in, passed a budget on time and was trumpeting it as this, you know, I am the greatest governor.
I've done something that hasn't been done in this state.
Yeah, right.
Like 2 decades.
Correct. And it was just getting it on, you know, forget the substance of the budget, but, yeah.
When you say that it's not really a budget, a spending plan, what would you call it?
I call it a spending plan. You know, the budget at the federal level.
Roadmap? helpful hints?
Well, the budget at the federal level is really, you know, nine spending bills, you know, and it's basically, you know, one bill for basically separate bills, generally, for each kind of portion of the government. So, you know, a defense bill and et cetera. And for years now, we haven't done that. We've done this omnibus thing, which allows you to put anything in it. And if you don't agree to everything that's in the budget, then you get accused of shutting down the government. And as I said, that's, you know, the Republicans always lose on that. I personally don't know why they're so scared of it, but I'm not going to edge into, you know, right wing radio talk show talk. So I'll stay away from that.
Well, thank you. It's interesting though, because when you hear, as you say, the conversations that take place, and you wonder, oh, okay, well, sometimes there's a lot at stake, but the and I don't mean to demean any one issue over another. I guess everything's important, but you know, you suddenly find yourself looking at, and that they're worried about riders and a GOP proposal to block district leaders from implementing plans to legalize marijuana possession.
Right.
Okay. In the District of Columbia.
Right.
And you think, all right, well, is that worth holding up the works here at this point? But I guess we will always have that. We always have had that.
Sure.
We always will have that. And it's these things. And maybe it's taking the stance on different issues that gets things resolved. I don't know.
It may be. And you know, the new narrative now is that looking ahead, and you said it this morning, yes, we're looking ahead to 2016, that one of the political things that's going on is getting propositions on ballots, and legalization of marijuana is one of them, getting propositions on state ballots that will energize the base to come out for the base to come out in the 2016 presidential elections, but also allowing the groups who support, say, legalization of marijuana or something, to put ads on radio and TV that will be supportive of candidates. So using those issues to flow money into candidates for the 16 elections. So that's why I think they're worried about, you know, legalization of marijuana in D.C., which, of course, Congress has control over the District of Columbia.
And then from my understanding, also a major part of the discussions, even though not, you know, inherently part of the budget, is whether what happens with the filibuster rules. Right. So Democrats took the step last year of eliminating the filibusters and saying that they were, okay, the system's broken and we're going to fix it.
Right.
Mitch McConnell said, it's a power grab. We don't like it. If we return...
He said, you're going to live to regret it. And if we ever get power, you know,
we're
going to
restore
it.
The old rules.
Right.
And now he's saying, we'll see.
him and Orrin Hatch and the folks who, you know, I think as... yeah, you know, it's a lot different when you're in control. And part of the problem is, you know, you really try and avoid personalities. But, you know, you could pick anybody on either side. But, Joe, if you had to work with Harry Reid for 6 years, the way he deals with people, the way he deals with things, would you really want to give him a break on anything? Would you not want to put it right in his face? And I'm sure you could say the same thing about, you know, Mitch McConnell if he was in control. But I don't see that rule changing. I don't see the folks in the Republican caucus being in a big hurry to change that rule. And they would be pointing at, you know, the president who, you know, in the next 2 years just is going to seems like is not going to be constrained by, you know, things like the Constitution and you know, the legislative process, at least from the Republican standpoint.
Do you think all this is happening because the new Republic can't report on it?
That wasn't an interesting story, though.
And
did you guys talk about the Rolling Stone thing as well?
We did yesterday.
Okay, yeah.
We didn't actually. We haven't gotten to the New Republic.
The New Republic one is an interesting thing, so did everybody walk off, or are they? Do they have anything?
Yeah, they're
left?
Done. I mean, as of right now, I mean, everyone kind of just said goodbye,
right.
And you know, I think. Workers across the nation said, "Oh, really? You can do that? That's kind of cool,
right?"
But you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, I do know that the students at Berkeley or Stanford who were protesting in the rallies were given extensions on exams and were not deemed to have missed school for that. So I guess you're allowed to do that as well.
It's all good.
It's all good.
When you think about a budget, as you say, maybe not a budget per se, but because there still can be
There's policy. Certainly, there's policy marbled throughout the budget, right? So yes.
And we can change, and we can look at things. It is a workable document, in the sense of, okay, because you sort of are working on things throughout the legislative year.
You would, you know, that's what the plan used to, but it sure doesn't seem like that ever happens anymore. It doesn't sound like those discussions are going on to any kind of any deep level, which is the worrisome thing. You know, and look, in law, we see this all the time. You know, and you put off something, you know, you get a 30-day extension, and then you work on you work on everything else. Now it's 29 days later, and you're back to the same place without having necessarily advanced the ball. I think the real question is going to be how is the Senate particularly going to be managed, you know, starting with the new, you know, with the new Congress, and are they going to? I think they're going to be handling policy issues kind of seriatim, you know, one at a time,
right,
rather than necessarily through the budgetary process. And then I think come October, when the Cromnibus runs out, then you'll see the real budget discussions happening.
And this other whole issue that, all right, you have the budget, we're trying to come to an agreement, and yet this is a Congress that really has done little or nothing all session. So it's hard to think, you know, as you mentioned the New York State budget earlier, of like, oh, look what we did. You know, finally you can say, oh, here's something that we did.
Right. I don't think, remember, a lot of folks in this Congress are going to be in the next Congress.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that this Congress necessarily
I think we're all painfully aware of that.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, you make that point, but let me ask you this. And I know this is a point that's been taken before, but what do you do if you're one of the outgoing senators?
Yeah.
You're now being asked to vote. Let's say that you're one of the outgoing senators, and Ted Cruz stands up and says, "I'll vote for this whole budget except for the president's immigration executive order." And you, as a senator, are personally in favor of it, but you now know that there's at least ambivalence among your constituents as to whether that's the way they would like to proceed. You know, what are the ethics? How do you vote that? Do you vote that by what you want, or do you vote it by the wishes of what you now know your constituency to have?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I do understand.
I mean,
should there
really be such an abrupt difference between December 11th and January 1st? I mean,
or even November 6th.
Correct.
Sixth.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
So, and I guess
I mean, do elections have consequences or not?
And I guess you look at that, and if I were a voting member, I guess you, and it's a really good point, because I want to make two points on this.
Okay.
One is that you would think, okay, well, these are the people that voted me in through the end of this year, and I'm going to do what I said I was going to do for those people who voted me in through the end of this year.
Right.
Okay. So that maybe
that's one way.
That's
okay.
One way of doing it. The other thing, and this is a slight tangent, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it, and I you're like the one person I can do this with. But have you been watching the C-SPAN retirement interviews?
I haven't. I saw a few of them.
C-SPAN has been doing this great series.
The one I saw was unbelievably candid.
Yeah, they're wonderful. Yeah. With both House and Senate members who are retiring,
right,
or leaving or voted out, whatever the case may be. And they're interviewing them, and it's their exit interview.
Yeah,
it's their here's what. Now, obviously, the circumstances vary greatly of whether you were, you know,
voted out,
or you're retired, or you've had enough, or whatever the case may be. And the ones where they've just had enough are obviously the most candid.
Right.
But it's fascinating, Richard. Really is, because I think, you know, we give these people a lot of grief and talk about, you know, how sour and awful they are, but in listening to them talk about what they've done, what they've accomplished, and the system and how they go into work on it and in it and as a part of it and outside of it, it's really fascinating.
It is, and I think there's obviously less pressure on them. But, you know, when you talk to these people, when you have the opportunity to actually talk to a senator, you know, kind of in a non-campaign context,
right,
or you know, any legislator, you're really struck by they do understand that it's a process. They do understand that they have to shake hands and get together with these people the next day, you know, unless you're out. And it's interesting how they understand that, you know, I think they understand that we kind of have to work together, and they do that. And the other thing you come away with, I don't know if you came away from it in these exit interviews, but, you know, for all the cynicism that we bring to this, a lot of these people really have, you know, moral viewpoints and policy viewpoints,
yeah,
and they really want to work, and they really think in good faith these are the best things for our country.
And I also think as I was listening, because I've now been watching. I'm now just addicted to these.
Okay, I have to watch these.
They're great.
Okay,
but you know when your uncle turns a certain age and he just doesn't care what he says anymore. That's what they're like.
Right.
They're just great. They're like, I don't care.
Right.
And they're really candid and they're great. But the one thing you hope for, and I don't know if this will come of this, I doubt it, but who knows, is maybe somebody will learn something from this. You know, maybe somebody will talk to these people and say, all right, this is how, have a guiding hand of what went right, what went wrong.
Well, I think the one thing they would learn, I think they will, but the one thing they learn whenever you speak to these folks, they really, just what I said before, they really stress how important it is to, you got to try and get along with the people you're working with. You know, and that could be whether you're working, at Phillips Lytle or WAMC,
right,
or in the Congress or the Senate, and you might not like everybody, but at some point you all got to row kind of in the same direction. I think that's one thing that the older, more senior people tend to say to the incoming, Congress people. And who knows, maybe it'll help.
Kumbaya, Rich. Kumbaya. Rich Honan is partner in Phillips Lytle LLP. He's partner in charge of the Albany office. For more information on the firm, you can go to their website, phillipslytle.com. Rich, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next month. Have a great holiday season.
You too. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.